Of course, every month, Cheryl Jones, our investigative reporter, appears with incredible stories, and she's got one for us, and we'll get right to it when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Cheryl Jones with us, of course, former anchor person with CNN. She's now part of our team. Cheryl, welcome back.
Thank you, George. I'm glad to be here.
I'm looking forward to this. And this is a neat story here. This was a friend of the late Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut.
Yes, they've been friends for 40 years, George. And it's an amazing story. He has written a beautiful biography about Edgar. It's certainly a tribute, a beautiful tribute with lots of wonderful pictures. And it just takes you inside a private journey of not only the Edgar that many of us knew, but the Edgar that we didn't know.
Well, let's get right into it. Go for it.
Okay. Our interesting person tonight is William Rasher. He's a retired Episcopal cleric and author, stage magician, and he's a longtime friend of someone we both knew and friend of Coast, the late Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. Canon Rasher's professional endeavors include such an unusual blend. It includes the paranormal, mystical theology, and psychic research. He's authored some 20 books, including biographies of famous magicians, psychics, and spiritual subjects. And his latest book is what we just mentioned. Our focus tonight is a biographical tribute, the story of how a cleric and magician became longtime friends with Edgar Mitchell, the man with the cosmic mind, and the NASA astronaut who believed in UFOs and aliens. In part one tonight, we'll talk about how it began, some notable people met along the way, including J. Allen Hynek, Barney Hill, Hal Puthoff, Rocketman Wernher von Braun, and Robert Goddard. And we'll talk about the epiphany Edgar experienced coming home from the moon and how unique mutual interests led to this 40-year friendship. Listen now to our conversation.
Our guest is William Bill Rasher, but he has so many earned and respected titles as a retired Episcopal cleric, a rector for 36 years, a canon, plus he's an author and a magician, just to name a few. What do you prefer to be called?
Well, in my years of professional work as a rector of a parish, called me Canon Rasher. But for purposes of our togethering now, why don't we just say Bill?
Then Bill it is. Bill, welcome to Coast.
Thank you.
First, tell us a little about yourself and how an Episcopal cleric becomes so deeply involved in paranormal, psychic research, mystical theology, and even professional stage magic.
Yes, it's hard to trace the threads. I grew up in a small mission in a small town, Highlands, New Jersey. And I don't know, I always had a bit of a sense of mystery. I went to the Episcopal Divinity School in Philadelphia. I graduated from Rowan College with my Bachelor of Science in Education. And as a kid, my grandfather and my father took me to see Blackstone and his show of 1,001 Wonders at the Adams Theater in Newark. It was a big magic show, 2.5 hours. The magic bug bit me, and I've never gotten through it or gotten rid of it. In the meantime, I had a very active ministry in Woodbury, New Jersey, one church, 36 years, retired in 1996 with a backlog of interest in very unusual events and people who were different, and I sort of gravitated to that, and here I am.
You knew and wrote about a lot of famous psychics, legitimate and otherwise. Could you tell us who the most interesting psychic you knew was?
Yes, I think the most interesting, controversial, was Arthur Ford. He was so well known. His book made a big splash in the 70s, Nothing So Strange. Arthur was a medium, different than just a regular psychic. The other one was Eileen Garrett, who established the Parapsychology Foundation in New York, sent me to Europe 3 times to ask questions of scientists on the paranormal. I was a grantee of the foundation. So all of this just tumbles in together, and I always tried to keep my feet on the ground in the subject.
You've written over 20 books, and you've exposed the fraud of the psychic mafia in one of your books, Religion, Magic, and Supernatural. Can you tell us briefly about that?
Yes, Lamar Keen was a fake medium, and he worked years at Spiritualist Camp Chesterfield. Eventually, he got so frustrated that he was ready to commit suicide. I met him through a Masonic friend. I flew down to Tampa, interviewed him for days, 3 days. He unloaded everything on me, and it was so shocking that the book, which I did not write but did all the research for, and the introduction, the bibliography, became a paranormal psychic search classic. It was called The Psychic Mafia.
How did you, as an Episcopalian cleric and the sixth man to walk on the moon, Edgar Mitchell, come together so that you end up writing his biography, and then you chose the title, The Man with the Cosmic Mind?
Yeah.
How did this happen?
Well, it happened because I had helped to book him for one of these big conferences on awareness and so on in Chicago at the Bismarck Theater. And we got together because he knew of my interests, and we had a simpatico about that.
In addition to being a close friend of Edgar's for many years, you've met and written about many other familiar people of note from the various worlds surrounding Edgar, UFOs, the paranormal, and psychic. And one was J. Allen Hynek. Did you bring J. Allen Hynek and Edgar Mitchell together?
In a way, I did. Hynek was to lecture in Chicago at one of these conferences on May 17th, 1973. And Edgar was there. And afterwards, I was invited with the two of them to the hotel room and listened to their discussion of UFOs, if they were real, where did they come from. And to make a long story short, in the end, they decided and agreed that they came from a parallel universe, just as real as we are. And how did they get in here? Well, through black holes, a dozen different ways. So when I left there, I was quite, how shall I say, not thrown off in any way, but I'd say a bit enlightened and awed by the discussion.
I can only imagine what being in the room at the same time with Edgar Mitchell and J. Allen Hynek must have been like.
Well, it was sort of surrealistic, if you know what I mean. Hynek was very, basically a quiet man, introspective, wonderful gentleman. Of course, they hit it off beautifully. And as we know with Project Blue Book, he started out hoping, the government hoped that he would defuse all this interest, but he wound up believing it.
His son, Paul Hynek, has been a guest on Coast and is a consultant now on Project Blue Book. Did you know Paul?
Yeah. No, I never met Paul. I've watched the program.
Well, what do you think Edgar would think about it?
Oh, he'd like that. And of course, the cases vary. You know, there's some that are more dramatic than others, but Hynek really became his own man and understood, I think, that the government didn't want the country to know the truth of this because they thought it was not good for the people, that they couldn't handle it. Whether they can now, we don't know. But I think we're heading toward a time when it will happen.
You knew Betty and Barney Hill and spoke with Barney about their abduction.
Well, that's an incredible case. And the people involved in it, most of them are gone. But when Fuller's book appeared on that subject, it really caused a stir. I did have conversation and talk with Barney. Barney was an Episcopalian, as I am, and sweetest guy. And he worked in the post office. I never talked with Betty, but I've talked with Kathleen Martin, her niece. She's a marvelous lecturer, and there's no fooling around. She has the facts correct.
And another person mentioned was Wernher von Braun. Did Edgar work with him?
Yes, he did. He thought the world of von Braun. They shared the same residence while he was training. Von Braun spoke and helped, was willing to raise funds for Mitchell's Noetics Institute, which he formed in 1973. Von Braun wound up being buried in Washington area, Arlington area, and his service, one of his services was held at the National Cathedral, conducted by Dean Sayre, who was the grandson of Woodrow Wilson.
Edgar also worked with Uri Geller, Hal Puthoff, and Russell Targ at Stanford Research Institute, did he not?
Yes, he did, and he had an open mind about Geller. Geller had amazed him with an incident of finding a clip that was gone for years. But his friends, Targ and them, they knew magic, and they also knew that Geller had a knowledge of magic. Geller is an enigma wrapped in a mystery.
You have so many treasured stories and facts and photos in your beautiful book, The Biography About Edgar D. Mitchell, Man with a Cosmic Mind. What's the most important thing about Edgar you'd like people to know?
Well, I think, you know, he was the only, he was one of 12 to see the Earth from the point of an extraterrestrial. They all had experiences, but his experience coming back was an epiphany. It was akin, in a way, to conversion. He already had interests. I mean, only Mitchell would have tried out the Zener cards to do an experiment on ESP, which nobody else knew he was doing at NASA. So Edgar was soft-spoken, pensive, meditative, and he gave us science with transcendence.
And that's the epiphany that he talks about, that he felt when he returned from the moon. He described it to me as a oneness, a cosmic consciousness. And you quote Edgar in the biography as saying, "We left Earth as technicians and returned as humanitarians." Does that sum it up for Edgar?
That's correct. I have a little favorite quote of Edgar's, which I think says a lot, but yes. "Suddenly from behind the rim of the moon, in long, slow motion moments of immense majesty, there emerges a sparkling blue and white jewel, a light, delicate, sky blue sphere laced with slowly swirling veils of white, rising gradually like a small pearl in a thick sea of black mystery. It takes more than a moment to fully realize this is Earth, home. My view of our planet was a glimpse of divinity." I like that quote.
That's beautiful. That completely changed Edgar, did it not?
Yes, it did. And he devoted his life after he left NASA and after he left the Navy to the study of consciousness. And that's how he formed the Institute of Noetic Science, which is a Greek word, nous, or a higher mind. That was in 1971. They now have 200-acre campus in California.
Knowing the late Edgar Cayce, Cheryl, that's fascinating to hear Bill talk about him like that.
Yes, it is. He has so many stories, of which we had time for all. I mean, you could literally sit down and talk to him for days at a time, I believe. And it's interesting that during those earlier years that Bill referred to, he was actually organizing conferences on awareness. And when he brought these two greats together, even then, he knew he was in the presence of double greatness with both J. Allen Hynek and Edgar Mitchell. And it turns out that Bill was interested in UFOs and aliens before meeting Edgar, and Edgar was interested in awareness and consciousness before meeting Bill.
I'll always remember the Uri Geller story. Uri, of course, being the mentalist, was talking about how Edgar Mitchell had lost his NASA tie clasp, and they were had lunch one day, and Uri was eating ice cream out of a bowl, and he felt something like in his mouth, and he didn't want to swallow it because it felt kind of foreign. It was the tie clasp.
I think Edgar became a believer at that moment, don't you?
Yeah.
And then there was the ESP experiment that he did aboard Apollo 14.
On the way to the moon, that's right.
Yes. And he felt it was a success. There was some controversy over it, but it was done along with psychic Olaf Johnson. And as a matter of fact, the book on the psychic feats of Olaf Johnson was written by the late Brad Steiger. Can you believe that?
Well, Brad wrote many books, too.
He sure did. And the epiphany that we referred to, Edgar had on his return to Earth from the moon, that was a definite turning point for Edgar. It would direct his whole future, and he said he'd like to grab the politicians by the gruff of the neck and make them look down at the beautiful Earth and planet.
I had an opportunity over the last weekend or so to meet Paul Hynek, who'd been on my program before. And, of course, Paul, being the son of the late J. Allen Hynek, was just a superb individual. I like him a lot. He did a great job on our show and did a great job at this event. Edgar knew Hynek as well, didn't he?
Oh, yes. As he talked about them coming together in this hotel room of a conference, an awareness conference, that Bill had organized, since he had been organizing those kinds of conferences during those earlier years. And, you know, can you imagine being in a conversation, listening in on a conversation between J. Allen Hynek and Edgar Mitchell?
I wonder what they talked about.
I think we know.
We sure do. What's coming up on the second half?
Well, I'll continue my conversation with Bill about his biographical tribute to Edgar, the pathway of greatness that he feels Edgar was destined to follow in his lifetime. And he talks with me about what sets Edgar apart from the other astronauts in a special group of 12 moonwalkers.
Well, that's amazing work too, Cheryl. And of course, as we get into phone calls with you later on, that's wide ranging, of course. Anything paranormal goes for. What are your favorite subjects, by the way?
Well, you know, I do like the subjects of UFOs and aliens. You know of my work with a number of conferences over the years and various projects in that regard. So that's a given. And, of course, Edgar was the NASA astronaut who believed in aliens and in UFOs as well, and took a lot of
sure did.
That. But he handled it well, and there are some stories in the book about how he handled it with a powerful upper hand.
Well, when we were at the Steve Bassett event in D.C.,
yes.
And Edgar Mitchell was one of the keynote speakers there, and he was telling all of us that he had never seen a UFO on the moon, but was told by people in government that we have been visited here, and he was a believer.
He definitely was, and one of those stories in the UFO community now, the UFO news circle, involves the Wilson Mitchell papers. And that's still a developing story. It's been out there for a while, but we continue to get little updates on it and so on. But that is something that I did ask Bill about. Bill keeps up on all of the stuff. Bill's 89, by the way.
Wow.
Sure wouldn't know it.
Lots of energy. Cheryl, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with the second segment next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Cheryl Jones, as we talk about the life of Edgar Mitchell. Mitchell, how long did you know Edgar, Cheryl?
I met Edgar, let me think, that's a tough question. I think it was 2004 at the first X conference that I hosted in Washington, D.C., and I believe that was the first one it was the first X conference in a long series of them over the years. But I believe that Edgar was at that one as a keynote or special featured guest.
My first introduction to him was when I had him on the program talking about his book, The Way of the Explorer, that he wrote.
Yes, and I actually was honored to be in a small private group that visited him in his home several years ago. I believe that was 2014, And it was so nice, George. He gave us a tour of his private space museum. And he had all the pictures and all of the memorabilia and all of that. And what an honor.
He lived down in Florida, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He did.
And this book that came out in January, Edgar Mitchell, The Man with the Cosmic Mind, great cover. Have you seen the cover with Edgar in his Apollo 14 uniform?
Oh, yes, I have it right here in my hand. It is a beautiful book. And I'm telling you, Bill Rauscher has done an excellent job in organizing it. It's simple to read. It's very well laid out, and there's so many great pictures. And for anyone who even knows Edgar, I know there'd be so many treasures in there, and you just flip through it. Just flipping through is fun.
That's
but
great.
It's just a wonderful book. It really is. He's done a beautiful job. There's so many stories in there that are precious.
Well, get us into part two.
Okay, in this segment, George, Bill Rauscher will share some of these stories about Edgar that we've mentioned that many who really know him may not even know, and he connects the dots. Amazing events in Edgar's life in this book that, in retrospect, you just have to step back and look at that pathway and say, wow, that could not have been a coincidence. And that this man followed the pathway from Roswell, where he grew up, to the moon and back, and then embarked on such an incredible highway of awareness, of consciousness, and as a dedicated advocate for peace on Earth and truth about UFOs and extraterrestrials. And he talks about Edgar as a genius, a visionary. He talks about his destiny, his legacy, his stories and his beliefs, the debunkers, the psychics, the UFOs and ETs, about churches and religions, and what he thinks Edgar would think about the UFOs in today's mainstream news, and how Edgar's passion, consciousness, fits into it all. We continue our conversation now about Edgar Mitchell's amazing life.
Did you and Edgar discuss whether consciousness survives after death?
Well, he had a terrific interest in out-of-body experiences. And yes, we did. But his insight into that would not be what the average person would approach it as. But he had a definite interest in that, because the issue is, as von Braun says, nothing disappears without a trace. All things are connected.
Do you think Edgar had some kind of destiny in respect to his future accomplishments? He had so many odd connecting dots that were significant and synchronistic happenings and pathways in his life, like you've referred to.
Oh, sure.
How could that just happen?
Well, you wonder. That's what I say. Well, my feeling is you have to leave a margin of mystery. I mean, let's face it, here he's born in Hereford, Texas. Then they move to a farm. His father sold farm machinery. And they wind up in Roswell, and he goes to school, and he passes Goddard's farm, who at that time became the father of rocketry and a forerunner of von Braun. And he flies airplanes when he's 16. He gets a license. And all of this seems to be a prelude on another level of reality, whereby it leads to him being one of the 12.
Yeah. And he became an advocate for disclosure, consciousness, inner space.
Oh, yes. He felt if it didn't happen during his time, it will happen, and that something is in the works, and we're due for an amazing experience.
Apart from the other astronauts and moonwalkers, what do you feel was Edgar's unique contribution, his legacy?
Well, I think his legacy was his genius in transferring his mind from an Earth-centered mentality to a transcendental mentality, and yet maintaining his humanness where he knew that you still had to put out the garbage.
Would you describe Edgar as futuristic, maybe even a prophet or a visionary?
I never thought of him as a prophet, but I did think of him as a visionary. Something happened to him, but it was already there waiting to happen. You asked me a while back about the title of the book. The title of the book came about by my thinking about all these things and rereading a book by R.M. Buck called Cosmic Consciousness. And there were four lines, and if I may just give you those quickly, I'll tell you why. Here it is, quote, "The prime characteristic of cosmic consciousness is, as its name implies, a consciousness of the cosmos, that is, of the life and order of the universe. Along with the consciousness of the cosmos, there occurs an intellectual enlightenment or illumination which alone would place the individual on a new plane of existence." Now that's Edgar Mitchell.
And he was not happy with debunkers and tricksters. Do you have a quick favorite Edgar and Moon hoax encounter story?
Well, of course, people, he didn't have much time for people like the amazing Randy or that encounter that he had with Bart, where he came into the house. He's the one that Buzz Aldrin punched in the mouth with a Bible and trying to get Edgar to swear on it that he never went to the moon. I mean, this was just beyond his. It's like the program with Bill Nye, the science guy, who sort of smirked at Edgar. And Edgar said, "Look, I'm here to share what I know. I'm not here to confront with you. If you don't want to talk, I'm out of here."
And that was on the Larry King show.
Larry King went bananas apologizing and so on. I heard that program, yeah.
He left his mark, and he left no doubt how he felt about debunkers. And I talked with him about that, too.
Sure.
Did he believe in psychics?
He believed in the psychic factor, but what he wanted to do was explain it. And, he was very interested in quantum mechanics. Well, of course, I couldn't talk quantum mechanics with him. I mean, I listen. But quantum mechanics concerns the problem of the behavior of matter and the interaction of matter with energy on the scale of atoms and subatomic particles. He could articulate that for forever. I would assume that Edgar could very much understand the story, say, of Jesus appearing through the closed door.
And he was an expert on quantum mechanics.
That's correct. And of course, that isn't my expertise, but I never pretended to be. And he didn't say, "Well, Bill doesn't know anything. What am I bothering?" He wasn't that way.
No, he wasn't. He was very humble, very approachable. Now, Edgar was really open about his beliefs of UFOs and aliens, although he told me and others he had not seen aliens himself, but he believed those he spoke with about that because of their extremely credible situations. And he was certainly a leading figure in disclosure and noted as the NASA astronaut who took the subject of UFOs seriously.
Oh, definitely.
Edgar was so compelled to speak out publicly about this.
Well, he believed that it was real. He was convinced it was real. He did all the research you could possibly do to show him it was real. And he felt that it should not be contained, that it might make the world better. We don't know. But he felt they were there. They were out there. No question about that with him whatsoever.
He made news worldwide frequently. And
yes.
Never.
And smirked at. He was smirked yes. at many times.
But he never wavered. Did Edgar ever share with you whether he thought the ETs were benevolent or hostile?
I think he felt they were benevolent at this time because he said once to me, he says, they've had plenty of time to get rid of us if they wanted to. But he said, obviously, they haven't. There's no question in me that they exist. They exist. He says, but what are they here for? What is their purpose? Is it to make a better Earth? Is it to take over Earth? Are we being observed? Why? For what reason? Is it to make us better people? Is it to warn us that we could be destroyed by our own violent means? And we could.
What do you think Edgar would feel about what's happening in today's mainstream news with the Pentagon admitting interest and research in UAPs or UFOs, along with videos that are released?
If it were today, he would be quite amazed of the interest, constant appearance of material, documentaries, this and that, and alien history, and oh God. I mean, I don't know whether he'd go for the aliens building the pyramids or anything like that, but he certainly would be amazed. And he sort of predicted that this thing will come about slowly. Eventually something will happen that will stun us.
Did Edgar and you ever discuss the impact that acknowledgement of ETs here on Earth would have on churches and religions?
Well, the Roman Catholic Church and the Vatican are aware of these things. I mean, they have their own planetarium, Castle in Rome. They have their own Jesuit astronomers. They're on to all this more than, shall we say, Protestantism. I mean, I had a Protestant clergyman tell me, if these things exist, they're all evil. Well, that crosses that off. Then the general public might say, well, gee, a flying saucer landed in Keensburg, New Jersey, but I got to get to the game.
So you and Edgar talked about the way churches handle the topic of UFOs and the paranormal a lot.
Yes, because the churches today, and I do know that field, my life's been in it, they're not presenting the message that they're called to present. Rather than preaching or speaking of consciousness raising. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Jesus was a teacher of civility also. And Edgar didn't like the churches not talking about consciousness raising, personal development, meditation, prayer, healing, life after death. You're not hearing that anymore. Not in many places, I'll tell you.
Very few people knew that Edgar Mitchell was a poet. And in your beautiful book, you have a whole chapter on that.
Oh, yes. I think the readers will find that very revealing of his inner self. There are several poems that are very remarkable. I like the one called Search. They can read that in the book.
Where can we find this beautiful biography, Edgar D. Mitchell, The Man with a Cosmic Mind?
Well, the way to do it is to go to this website, 1878press.com.
And you have some other books that you've written there. And you also have a website where listeners can find out more about your books.
Yeah, that's correct.
It's mysticlightpress.com.
That's correct.
Bill Rauscher, it's such a beautiful, meticulously detailed book and an amazing tribute to your dear friend and ours, the late Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut and sixth man to walk on the moon, with so many treasured stories, poems. You did a wonderful job, a beautiful tribute to him.
And it's well, may I say goodbye in this way to all of your listeners and to all of us. I wish you all the good thoughts of Earth and beyond the galaxy.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Bill. It's been wonderful having you here with us and with our Coast listeners.
What kind of magician was he, or is he, Cheryl?
I don't think he's doing it much anymore, but he was a professional stage magician, and he was right in there with the best of them.
How did he get to know Edgar?
See some of his performances.
How did he get to know Edgar so well?
Well, he was himself organizing conferences back in the 60s and 70s on awareness and consciousness. So while he was into consciousness and awareness, Edgar was into UFOs and ETs, or the belief that they did exist. And when Bill was organizing this one conference in Chicago, he told me, He invited J. Allen Hynek and also Edgar Mitchell. He wanted to meet both of them. And then in the earlier segment, he talked briefly about being in the same room together with them. But there's much more of all of that in the book, and it's just so compelling. But he organized conferences, and they found that they had a lot of mutual interest, of course, and just developed into a long-term friendship that lasted up until Edgar passed away.
When you talked to Edgar in your days, what did you get? What kind of impression did you get from him as a person?
I thought the way Bill described him was perfect, because he said, here's a man, basically, who was the sixth man to walk on the moon, one of 12 moonwalkers. And Bill knew him so much better than we did, and he describes him as such a genius, an expert in quantum mechanics, and he said, you name it, he was an expert at it. He was not only a technician, but he said that Edgar himself said that they went to the moon as technicians and came back as humanitarians. But Bill made the point that I thought really summed it up, that Edgar also remembered that when he came home, he had to take out the garbage. So he never felt like he was above just being a human like all of us.
Never went to his head, did it?
No, and I didn't know Edgar was a poet. There's a whole chapter on his poems, and he writes so beautifully, it's unbelievable.
All right, stay with us, Cheryl. We're going to take a break. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back and chat some more. And, of course, conversations with Cheryl, your phone calls.